This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome Monday night, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. It's the total eclipse of the heart, or of the moon, of the sun. Anybody from the 80s see that, though? All that, the total eclipse stuff, Johnny Lupinacci, man. You know, were you a fan of the total eclipse of the heart?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Come on, man. I mean, it's iconic music from our youth.
I know.
Of course, of course. And it is a special day. If you were in a place where you were able to view the eclipse, what an awesome thing. It's always fun to be reminded of our, you know, of our humanness, of our dependency on the sun, those couple of minutes where it gets chilly out and dark in the middle of the day. And, you know,
it's
what a
cool
moment. So
it was really cool. So I went in 2017 with my daughter. We actually drove like 6 hours to get into about the totality, and it was the coolest thing. And on our way, we didn't buy any glasses or do anything like that, but I pulled over at a hardware store, ran into the back and got a welder's mask. And it was the perfect observation tool. You know, we look cool. It's so sitting on my back deck today, you know, I was out there today looking up, and, you know, neighbors were looking over, you know, just kind of wondering. I said, you know, it's an eclipse today. They're like, oh, we wondered why it was getting colder and darker out. It's like, oh, yep. Okay. I'm glad you guys were paying attention to the news today, Johnny. It is, though. Hey, 855-752-4842 is the number if you want to call, jump in. Man, Monday, holy crap, we're back already, Johnny. Awesome.
Yeah, what a weekend. Awesome week last week.
Awesome.
I mean, it was like all-star week. We recapped it on Friday. If you didn't, we're not going to recap last week Monday. Because we've got exciting stuff to go this week. And like every week is a big week for education. This is another great lineup. So without us taking up any more time.
Full lineup. We've got a great guest, Johnny. This is, you want to talk about amazing. An educator doing democracy, school board member, interim dean, teacher educator. Yeah, she's the interim dean of the School of Education at the College of New Jersey. She started the Urban Education Program. That was the first teacher preparation program in the state of New Jersey with a focus on recognizing and redressing inequity. Her research is focused on training and retaining great teachers. She often uses arts-based methods in her work. She also writes editorials for her local newspaper. She is Tabitha D'Angelo. Tabitha, welcome to Busted Pencils. How are you?
Thank you. Great. Thank you for having me.
I mean, so you have been, when we came across, so Tabitha responded, Johnny, to the call for volunteers that we put out for Busted Pencils saying, hey, we're looking out there. We want some educators who's got some great stories. I get the email from Tabitha. We had a nice little meeting. And her story, though, I mean, Tabitha, your school board races in you were on the school board, Central Bucks County. That's Pennsylvania, right outside of Philadelphia. You were a school board member during a really pretty interesting time. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about that. It sounded like there was a Moms from Liberty type of issue. And I mean, things went crazy. You were then in the minority, but right now things have been restored. Let's hear a little bit about Tabitha D'Angelo and her, you know, fun and games with Central Bucks School Board.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would say I started going to school board meetings about 10 years ago. And, you know, I just moved into the area. I wanted to see what was going on. There was an opening in my region. We run by region in Central Bucks. And I thought about running, but then I thought, I just got here. I don't know what's going on yet, so let me learn. And it was really surprising because the longer I started going to school board meetings, the more I saw the school directors really just, it seemed like some of them just had like a disdain for teachers. Like teachers would come, they would stay late on nights where there were curriculum presentations. And then there'd be a couple of school board members who would be like, but why reflection? Like reflect, you know, why do students have to reflect? You know, that seems dumb. And then I would go home and write these like little mini lit reviews and send them to the board and be like, no, reflective practice is really important. And so then that just sort of build it over the time. And then we had an opening because the person in my region stepped down because she was ill. And I put in because I thought, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to be on the school board. I'll be the only educator on the school board and I could help, you know, decode all the jargon and right. collaborate and all this good stuff. And they didn't, I wasn't chosen to be on. Then I was like, now I'm going to run. And so I ran and I won my seat right in the midst of COVID. And so most people who have been paying attention know that that's really when a lot of this really divisive rhetoric started happening in school boards. Pennsylvania School Board Association was even doing sort of trainings and workshops on how to de-escalate at school board meetings. So I won my seat, but I, like I said, we go by region. So even though by total votes, the Democrats, the progressives won, it's almost like the Electoral College, right? We wound up in the minority 6-3. But I still thought naively, like, oh, I've done training in courageous conversations and I know all about conflict resolution and I'm going to be the person who brings us all together. And they were not interested at all. So I spent 2 years just trying to be a voice for the folks who voted for me and just lost every vote, you know, for 2 years.
It's your story. It said it reminds me, we were talking about this. I had a little encounter and I was a little back ways in around 2011, 2012, where I was living in small town Pennsylvania at the time and an opening had come on the board. And I had some friends that were like, hey, you're a teacher. You've been working in this education. You'd probably be a good candidate for school board. And I'm like, well, I'll give it a try. I didn't get put on for the person who stepped down, but it did encourage me to run, but I didn't get even voted in during the running. Because even at that time, it word got out that I was a college professor and that my number one mission probably for getting on the school board was to do away with the Christmas play. So I didn't even, and now think about that. That's 2011 before the real crazy. You're in there in the heart of crazy, like where people are sitting. The fact that you had to have de-escalation training from the Pennsylvania School Boards Association, and you went in there too with this idea. I'm an educator. I'm, you know, maybe I'll talk some reason. We'll have some civil conversations. We'll make this. No. Johnny Lupinacci, man, what are you thinking?
I mean, I'm just excited to have our guest Tabitha here tonight because like we talk about all the time, Tim, you know, educators are on the front lines of all of democracy in action in our community. And there's so many different ways we can get involved. And, you know, Tim, we were kind of joking, reminiscing about how we're often like, we need to talk to more, you know, educators, teachers, teacher educators, school board members, you know, who are out there in the trenches doing that. And we love to connect. And then here, our guest here tonight, you know, is all of these things. I'm grateful for you taking time out of your evening, Tabitha, and joining us, but also for all the work you do, you know, and for your story and sharing your story and process. And Tim, I'm just, you know, a little bit of a fly on the wall listening and hearing the similarities between, you know, both your and Tabitha's experience as, you know, advocates of public education. So it's just an exciting night. Great way to start off the week.
I just think about that though, too. It's like the naivete, Tabitha, that you and me went into there with this assumption of like, hey, you know, we know what we're talking about. It might be nice. People are going to appreciate us when we get here. And
it's so much about power. There were so many times where, you know, a vote was going to come up and we would be surprised at the vote. And I would say to our school board president all the time, you have the votes. It's 6-3. You're going to win every vote. All I'm asking is if we can have a conversation ahead of time and maybe talk things through and see if there's any common ground or anything like that. But it wasn't about that at all. It was they came in with an agenda. They had a checklist of, you know, we're getting rid of these books. We're not going to allow students to use the pronouns they want. That, you know, they had this agenda and they were just going to power through. And it actually backfired, because now at this last election, that it flipped because the community saw that and they weren't happy with it.
So that flip then is now you're not a part of the flipped school board, or are you?
No, I'm not. No.
Okay. So there's a new slate, there's a new slate and the majority replaced the old majority. And is there a sense that this was in, how do I put this? So was this an election about the fact that the people of Bucks County had said, okay, enough of this stuff, this is crazy?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I mean, even when I was on the board, I suspected that we were really fighting like 4 dozen people who were just loud, you know? And what I really think is that the average person doesn't really pay attention to what's happening on the school board. Mm. So they just sort of, you know, like we're all local people, they just vote by party or whatever. But because the local and national media were covering our school board, moderate folks of, you know, all political persuasions started to be heads up and saying, oh no, you know, this isn't the way we want our tax dollars spent. This doesn't match with even our philosophy of education or how schools should be run. And I think it's just because people finally started paying attention.
No, I love that. It's Busted Pencils, Fully Let It Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education. The number is 855-752-4842. Give us a call. Our guest, Tabitha DeAngelo, school board member, well, not anymore, but, you know, still doing the stuff out there, writing, though, for the paper, putting in pieces, interim dean of the School of Education, just an educated educator who's on Busted Pencils tonight, Johnny, talking education with us. Tabitha, when we come back from the break, though, we'll do a little bit more school board, but I also want to talk about a piece that you had published, Protecting Public Education Can Help Protect the Country from Another January 6th Insurrection. And people are like, wait, why now? Because actually, the election is coming up, and we say about on civic media, what we're doing here is we need to recognize what we're voting for here. It's an incredibly important election. Our guest, Tabitha DeAngelo, she's the interim dean for the School of Education at the College of New Jersey. More when we get back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can just talk about it. It's Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education. We do want to talk about it, though. That's what we do here every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. 855-752-4842. Always on the show, though, talking about public education being the foundation of democracy. Yep. And putting out and saying, you know, anytime an educator that steps into that role to do democracy, we want to talk to them. And we have that person tonight, Tabitha DeAngelo. She's currently the interim dean of the School of Education at the College of New Jersey. She also did her time on the Central Bucks County School Board during that time when things got crazy, when people decided like, hey, we believe that we should censor all kids from reading things we don't like. And you know what? We don't care if the rest of you, they had to come back on them though. So there is some kind of sanity back there. Tabitha, anything else though from the school board? I mean, here, maybe let me ask you this question. If somebody in your position, an educator, came up and said, Tabitha, you ran for school board, do you think I should do it?
Yeah. you know, yes, I think, yes, absolutely. I've had a lot of very, very real conversations with people about what it means to be on the school board, what to expect, what not, you know, not to be let down. But it's the same thing I tell my students, because a lot of my students are going to teach in historically underperforming school districts where, you know, there are lots of kids who are marginalized, they don't have a lot of resources. And I say to them, you know, the same thing I would say to somebody on the school board, and it's the reason I didn't quit, is I may not see, or you may not see, the progress you want to see while you're on the board, you know, but you have to keep your eye on like that vision and know you're working in that direction. And so you may not see it. You may not see the fruits of your labor, but if you're working in that direction, it's really important to do it because, you know, as a white woman, I have the privilege. I could tap out and my kids will be fine. Yeah. Right. And this, but it's not, you know, I felt like that's, I wanted to use my privilege in a different way and say, I could tap out and my kids will be fine, but I'm gonna hang in there because this is really important. And that's what I would say to someone else, who was thinking about running as well.
That's really great, man. Tabitha, thanks for sharing that for our listeners too. And for people out there thinking about it, like, maybe I should do this, but do I need to, like, what, you know, really weighing up the important sort of responsibilities that when you know enough to be part of that change or to contribute, you know, here we are, we talk about it. We're experts in education. We got the degrees, we've done the time, we've worked in schools, communities, and classrooms. And you know, it's important because we can often find ourselves in a position where you're right. Our kids would probably be fine. Right. They maybe go to a school where it's okay. Maybe the funding's just enough. Right. Or they're not targeted necessarily with unjust disciplinary policies and things that are happening in schools. But that's not enough, because in a democracy, like, right, it's a threat to anyone's good education is a threat to everyone's. And that's really important to remember. And I love hearing that for our listeners to hear, you know, Tabitha, you weighed that up and you were like, no brainer, I'm in.
Yeah. And we also need more people on school boards who know they don't know everything. Right. Sure. I feel like there are, you know, there's like a typology of people who run for school board, and I think there are people who really have good intentions. I think there are people with like an axe to grind, you know, they're mad about something specific on the school board, like standards-based report cards or something that happened to their kid. And then there are some people who are using it as a stepping stone for like other political aspirations. And so we get a lot of people who aren't educators, but they think they know. Right. Mm. And they're basing it all on their personal experience because phonics worked for them, you know, and we really need more people who are just intellectually curious and who really know that they don't know everything, and they're willing to kind of, you know, get their hands dirty and collaborate and really trust educators, like allow educators to be professionals and recognize that professional knowledge is something that they should be listening to.
See, and I think that's one of the reasons too, when I thought about it, was largely what you kind of described as what's the, you know, who is the typical school board member? And is, you know, you run into any problems when you say typical, but there for me, it was always hearing, or at least what seemed to be, yeah, people, some with good intentions, some with lots of axes to grind, but it always felt like there was just nobody there representing the teachers in the standpoint of where, you know, it was like there ought to be an educator on the school board. And it even made me question, this is where I started even questioning democracy. I'm like, do we really need elected school boards? Shouldn't we have appointed people and the right appointed people? I remember even writing a blog probably like 15 to 20 years ago, and I called it, you know, 19 and not a felon. You know, requirements to be on a school board. It's, you know, because it's like, yeah, that's the entry level bar. You're 19 and you can't be a felon, at least at that time. And you're sitting there going, but shouldn't there be other qualifications to be a school board member?
No, absolutely. And, you know, when I first got on the school board, the superintendent at the time, he met with each of us individually. And this is a man with a doctorate in education who, you know, I loved his research, his doctoral research, but now he's got 9 people who may or may not know anything about education, teaching, learning, child development, whatever, and that we're his boss. You know, that's a problem. I think just maybe just the idea of school boards are a problem, but that's a whole nother issue.
Well, it is. You think about it, right? But then we come back to going, okay, but in a democracy, in a public school setting right here, it's like the school is, and we said this all the time on Busted Pencils here too on Civic Media, is that this is where democracy, this is foundational. And the reality that's happening here is that, you know, to practice citizenship, your school board is an elected representative group of people who are supposed to represent the commons of that area. And so, yeah, there's part of me with it's like a frustration of going, shouldn't you have to have some qualifications? But then realizing, though, too, it's like, I don't want to champion, you know, some form of an appointed position where then that becomes political, somebody gets in power, and then the next thing you know, because we've seen that happen too. And I think a lot in higher education, we see that now more and more, you know, particularly at public institutions where you hear governors saying they want control of the regents or something like this. And then all of a sudden, you know, a public campus in a state is then run by the governor because the governor has the ability to appoint a majority of those people. So there's a worry there. And I think that's where I always come down on this one is to go, I really wish there were appointed. And then I said, wait, what about this though? Each position has to be elected, but we should designate that each of the elected positions has some form of at least a base level qualification. You know,
I love that. Or a representation of different perspectives and populations in our local community, because I do think there's something really special about keeping it almost parliamentary, you know, like really keeping it representative. You know, Tim, we always talk about being work like blue collar scholars. So it's important to have people from all the industries and all the kind of interests in community part of our public education decision making. That part is special. It's also democratic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a wonderful aspect of it. We barely got into this, so when we come back after the break, Tim, I know you'll take us to break, but last week we got real fired up. We had caller LA Tom, you know, call up and really remind us, you know, about the
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. 855-752-4842. That's the number. Give us a call. Jump in here. Our guest, Tabitha DelAngelo. She is the interim dean of the School of Education, College of New Jersey. Did time on the school board, Central Bucks, is now... You do a public, or you continue to stay active because the Beacon, the Central Bucks Beacon.
Bucks County Beacon.
Bucks County Beacon. You are a journalist for them at this point now. You're covering the school board, writing education pieces in there. How is that going? And I mean, is that work? Do you feel like you get feedback on that work? Does the neighborhood, you know, do your neighbors come out and go, that was a good one, Tabitha, or oh my, or both?
Yeah, a little of both. I mean, I think, you know, one of the struggles anytime the school board, you know, the school board is divided, and it was, you know, it leaned one way, now it leans the other way. And so there are people in the neighborhood who fear that their voices aren't going to be heard. And so I really am trying to practice what I preach in that column and cover issues related to the school board, but in a way that is inclusive, where I'm acknowledging, you know, even voices that I may not agree with and saying, okay, you know, I hear you. Like years ago, I did a weekend with the Op-Ed Project, and they talked about like the to be sure statement, right? Which is like, to be sure, you think this, but let me just address that for a second, right? So I try to do that in a really respectful way. And my goal is to try to help people see where we really do have common ground. Sometimes we don't, you know, and in my role as interim dean, I also have the opportunity to write op-eds for, you know, New Jersey papers and things like that. A librarian and I just did a piece on the Freedom to Read Act in New Jersey. So I'm trying to stay engaged that way and also be an example for my students, because I talk to my students a lot about advocating for whatever it is that they believe in, especially around public education, because that's where they're going to be working. And so, so we also practice those kinds of things in the teacher prep program. Like, what is it to write an op-ed and write and send it? You know, it might not be published, but use it as a way to process what you're thinking, to, you know, to get feedback, whatever, and then and send it. And some of our students have been published. And so, you know, those are the ways that I'm trying to continue to stay engaged in not just my local school board, but also in New Jersey where I work.
Well, and one of these pieces that too, because we've been, you know, I've been kind of teasing it. It goes along though with, you know, a piece that I had put out on the Busted Pencils blog over the weekend. I call mine the American Patriotic Supremacy Curriculum. Tabitha calls hers Protecting Public Education. Yeah, can help protect the country from another January 6th insurrection. Just a quick quote. Make no mistake, there are people in power who do not want our children to get the best education possible. Educated people are harder to control, and there are powerful people who want to control their own interests in power and finance by manipulating our citizenry, and that manipulation comes in the form of only telling one side of the story. This goes on to talk about January 6th and the storming of the Capitol. Putting it there, I took a little bit more of an angle and saying, you know, how did we get to the point where you could have that many people show up on that day to do that act? And I was kind of like, well, the public schools bear a little bit of responsibility for not teaching a really powerful social studies and history curriculum. Because I said, when you saw the people on January 6th there, totally disagree with them, but they felt like they were, you know, acting out and in part of some type of a real rebellion to restore some form of liberty. I mean, they were really thinking. And I said, you know, for me, it's like, where did these visions or where did these really ridiculous truths come from? And I was like, well, you know what? It's from a shallow teaching and learning of what we typically are teaching most people in America, which is we have a very glorified, you know, one-sided kind of American patriotic Yahoo, we're all the best curriculum. And, you know, I've criticized it for saying that that has ramifications. And people are like, Tim, nobody pays attention to that. It's just boring. I said, you know what? You might be right. However, the reality, though, of when you see a bunch of people showing up at a protest, you know, with the don't tread on me, they think they're going to, it's like they learned that story of freedom fighters from somewhere. And I'm telling you, that story came out of their public schools, Johnny, right?
I know you're
never as convinced. I'm different
opinion than you on this, though, Tim. I think we all land on a similar spot, but I give a little bit less credit to the curriculum. And I do think schools are not benevolent in this. I think that the people who are, and I'm not sympathetic to this, to the insurrection at all, not a supporter, not sympathetic to it, but I do, you know, for all learners, I think there's this moment, that they genuinely believed why they were there. They had genuine belief for it. I don't think it's crazy. I don't think it's, although I don't support it, I understand the tactics used to build that base for their understanding. They truly believed it. And I when I work with teachers, I do, like, where do we get our information from? How are we in schools teaching young people to think, ask questions, and to gather information to build trustworthiness from where they get it? Not to choose where information comes from because it's liberal or it's conservative or it's Republican or it's Democrat, you know, not just because it's on YouTube or on the web. And I really firmly believe the upcoming generation, unfortunately, grew up in this mass misinformation and lies and this arguments around what can we believe, that they are more attuned to this necessity. But I do think for a while, schools, for a lot of reasons, I'm not blaming teachers, but I think for a lot of political reasons that are tangent to the curriculum, we haven't done a great job of empowering people to be thinkers. And
that was part of what I argued in that piece was, I mean, maybe this is what you're saying, but is about like, what does it mean to be media literate? You know, how do I evaluate sources? How do I know that, you know, what is an indisputable fact? And then what is a perspective? And what is a narrative? And what is my personal truth? And all of those things are different. But we need to be able to have, you know, to know like what are data that can be verified. And what I was seeing at the school board and also in curriculum is that there was a push to move toward curriculum, especially social studies curriculum, but even in science, that wasn't based on verified facts or consensus in a field. It was based on somebody's personal truth, like things that they argue around a kitchen table. And that was not okay. And that's really what was bugging me when I wrote that.
Yeah. And then when you've been taught your whole life, mostly this is what I talk about. I get on my soapbox about let's push to a post-schooling era. But schooling has been around there's a right answer. The person in the front of the room knows it. Is going to maybe tell it to you. Maybe it's at the back of the book. Maybe it's somewhere in the chapter, but you're going to find that one right answer. And that's what it is. And mostly we've learned to just wait until someone tells it to us. So a lot of schools just finding out once the authority tells us what to think and do, then we do it. And that's the correct answer. And we do that socialized over and over and over again. And like Tabitha brought up, it weakens our ability to be like media literate, to hear something and not think it's truth, but like to ask, where'd that come from? Is that really responsible? How do I think? And am I also, does my voice matter? And even if I'm wrong, my voice should matter, right? I should be recognized and valued in my community. Even if I'm wrong, I should hear that I'm wrong by my peers. You can't, you know, that's not really true, Johnny. That's not helpful to the common good, but I feel like I belong, right, to a group of people who can hold me accountable. I think when we got into like this one correct way of doing this answer, you're either right or wrong, and built a culture around real exclusionary politics on both the right and the left, right? Of like, who's right and do you fit in and do you belong? And I think that gave public schools, Tim, kind of a bad rap in media. It was like, well, you don't belong if you're not liberal. Well, that's not true. Everybody belongs in public schools.
Right.
It's a democracy. However, those of us who identify as liberal or, you know, on the left side are advocates of human rights. And that might be something some of you all on the right actually also value, but now you're polarized into these fixed categories. So I'm hoping more this, I have optimism for this generation, the kind of work that our guest Tabitha is doing. I want to hear more about it. I want to learn more about it because like she said, it's at that common ground. We can disagree and find common ground on really important things that strengthen democracy. We can have different ideas, but we can both or all figure out where we get our information from and how we best apply it to the futures we want for our community, not so that somebody can be in charge of us.
But I wonder though on this one, because Tabitha, you made this statement, I like that you said that, you know, the personal truth and the reality is when you're working with people to have them, you know, how do you help somebody say, look, that's your personal truth. It's BS, but it's your personal truth. And I'm going to let you hold it, I guess, but I mean, there's a part of that though, that is to say, Johnny, you're saying like, I need to hold you accountable. It's like, Johnny, you know, and we said, it's like, you don't get to have your own facts on these things. And I think what happened on the social studies, what really pushed me, and I know I was pushing more of a story there when I said that, but it was the reality that there was so much, you know, attack of a liberal multicultural curriculum and how it had destroyed America. And it was just like, nothing is further from the truth. That really cool multicultural Howard Zinn-based curriculum, other than being talked about by me and you and social studies faculty and stuff like that, it never really made its way into the K-12 schools. What continued to stay in K-12 schools was largely an American patriot story, which is okay, but that kind of that truth, absent of any other truths, is a real difficult. But we get so much here, Tabitha. Yeah, though
I think it's not okay. Actually, I mean, when the curriculum is based on American exceptionalism, you know, westward expansion, right? When that's what it is, and when it's like dates and names, and it's really dry as well, then it's boring, right? And so I do think that what social studies hasn't done, and some social studies educators have, but really tell like real stories, like what is the conflict? Who is this person? Like who were they really? Like there's this whole, who is it? James Lowen writes about like heroification, right? Yeah. So we learn about, you know, Abraham Lincoln, and he's like this hero, but like, who was he? And where did he fall? What wasn't so great, you know? And to really get kids interested so that they will dig a little deeper and figure out like, you know, what it is that they believe and question things and really be critical thinkers. And, you know, and also to your point, I do think that there was a pushback that as soon as curriculum started to look a little less like American exceptionalism, or teachers were bringing in counterpoints, like let's look at the Native American perspective on Columbus, right? Then there were folks who just, they didn't know how to handle that. Like they did not want anything that challenged their way of thinking. And then they called it indoctrination, right? And so, but like we were talking about a couple of days ago, I think it's the opposite. I think what we were doing was the antidote to indoctrination, because I think public schooling for 100 years has tried to indoctrinate kids into this American exceptionalism. And then, you know,
and then we get January 6th, and then all of a sudden, Johnny and Tim and Tabitha have to run for school board again.
Oh, my goodness.
Tabitha it's, Del Angelo.
Where can we find more of Tabitha?
Right. So, you know, look, I write for the Bucks County Beacon. It's a local paper around here. That's school board issues. I also write like academic papers that are super boring, but like, no, they're not. They're not. They're like
not boring.
So interesting. Everybody should read them. but yeah, so I think locally, you know, if you Google me, you'll find me.
Google. And what do you think about coming back on bus? It's almost out. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Great guest, Tabitha Del Angelo. She is the interim dean of the School of Education at the College of New Jersey, ran for school board Central Bucks County right during COVID, was part of that group of, you know, a minority during the time when a Moms for Liberty faction took over their school board and pretty much rammed a whole bunch of craziness down the throats of the citizens. And what was great about Tabitha was talking about, she was there during that time, was a vote 6-3. She was in the minority trying to talk, you know, some sense into people. But Johnny, there we go. You know, the reality when I said, would you do it again? And would you give advice? And her answer was, yeah, she would, and we should do it again. And I would say that if you're listening too, right, you know, you're wondering, boy, would I want to get into that? Yes, you would, because need you. Yeah. Even being a minority, like when she said she was there, she had to know that she was, but she still had something to contribute.
Going against the grain, having a voice that is not with the, you know, with the dominant politics of a place, it's even more important. Right. And hopefully those spaces become places where that's more welcome, because I think on all sides, that is absolutely what's necessary. This pattern of like swinging all one way and then all the other way, to have these, you know, decision-making spaces where everybody agrees with us. It's not democracy. It's not how it works, right? It's supposed to be messy. It's supposed to be complicated. That doesn't mean that folks disrespect one another or fight with this sort of vitriol nature that we're experiencing right now in politics. But it does mean that we learn to disagree in ways that are generative, in ways where we say, okay, we're not agreeing. How do we get more information to figure out how we'll land on something that's in the interest of the common good? Or in the case that we're talking about here, you know, stronger, more stable public schools, well-funded, great places for kids and for the adults helping those kids learn B. That's what we're going for here. That is nonpartisan. That is all hands on deck. And that doesn't need to be so vitriol, right? Doesn't have to be so like, so knock down, drag them out. We can disagree and have healthy conflict. That's important. So right. It reminds me, you know, Tabitha, we asked her and we started joke about, oh my God, would you do it again? I mean, nothing about our civic duty, any of us, L.A. Tom calls and reminds us, like, we the people are the government.
Right.
There's nothing easy about being in a democracy, right? It's work all the time, but it's worthwhile work, right? And it's not any different than the kind of work you do. Tim, you always bring up your neighborhood. It's not any different than, you know, being a contributing member of your neighborhood community. Doesn't mean you have to be the guy outside waving to everybody. Maybe that's one of the ways you're social. You could have an introverted neighbor who's also contributing because, you know what, when they're on their downtime, you know, they're out picking up some trash, or, you know, they're taking in someone's trash cans or whatever your neighborhood does. Civic duty is work, but it's worthwhile work. It's sort of rent. You think about it like this. It's rent we all pay to be in a strong community. It's just the work we do to pay it forward towards one another. And it comes back around. And we learn to do it in schools and classrooms, right? That's where we learn to do it.
I was going to say, make that connection, because then come back to it and go the reality, which is why we really want strong public schools.
Well, I'm going to play both ways on this one. Or we don't learn it in schools, and then we got to change schools. And I think that's a lot of places right now. If all you're having me do as a kid is fill out bubble sheets and you're telling me who's smart and who's not based on how they do on that bubble sheet, and you're day in and day out, you know, promoting that the only way to be successful is to go on to college. Not that going on to college is a problem, but if I hear day in and day out that the only way to be successful is to score really high on these meaningless bubble tests,
right?
You know, to behave in school and to go on to a good college, then I know that most of the people in my life, one, must not be successful according to my school, or two, I'm not going to be that successful when I don't meet those marks. And I think, you know, schools are both a great site for strengthening our community, and they also are not benevolent in the fact that we have been weakened. I'm not going to blame teachers and schools wholly, but they've been part of this process. So, you know, if we're not learning those important things, then we're learning other stuff, and the message is kind of clear.
I don't think you're blaming. It's just pointing out the reality, because you said, I know great teachers, and people are out there saying it's the power that has taken over our schools, particularly, and we point this out all the time, since 1983, Nation at Risk. You know, there has been a dominance of schooling, and you talk about that, Johnny, schooling, not education, schooling, and an indoctrination factory, largely around facts, you know, achievement, all kinds of successes, to the reality, though, of saying, like, man, you know, school has become, well, it's become school. And Johnny, you want to talk about, we want here to celebrate the beginning of a post-school era. In other words, because when we're talking about Latin, you know, post-punk, we want post-schooling. We want education. We want discovery. We want critical thinking. We want, when a kid looks down and sees something amazing, exciting, that they are allowed to talk about it, even if it's not the quote right answer, but they're excited about it. We celebrate their curiosity, their excitement. Because you want to have contributing members who then become citizens. Forget about college. Becoming functioning, contributing members, citizens of our neighborhoods and our democracies, so that they're not putting on three-pointed hats and believing they're going to reenact the Boston Tea Party the next time some demagogue gets out there and tries to say that the election was stolen, it's all fabricated. No, 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 no. This is where post-schooling, Johnny. That's what I'm talking about, though, you know?
Well, yeah. And I just make it clear, like, I think college is great for some folks. And I think higher education is really important. But it's not a matter of like, if you do really well on a bubble test, that's going to measure sort of your success and that you have to go that pathway to be a contributing member or listened to member in our community. And I do think that that's for a little blip in time, most recently, that's been sort of the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been really elitist who gets to have a say in the decision making. It's been tied to degrees that don't necessarily make you an expert on the matters or the only experts. And so like just some humility in the whole process, right? Mm-hmm. Like just like getting to that point where we learn together to be together and we make decisions to enact the world we want to be in.
Yeah, man. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Yeah, we're coming down. End of a Monday. Looking forward to an incredible week. Tomorrow, Mike DeGuire talking about billionaires taking over Colorado. Billionaires taking over Colorado. Man, and all kinds of stuff. Educators Amplified Wednesday and all kinds of stuff moving on. Busted Pencils. We'll check you out tomorrow.